Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri and Red Powell.
Another new day dawns for 40k, and tomorrow a new day will dawn again, and then another new day. And who knows, maybe we'll get to the 41st millennium one of these days.
But Adam, war is eternal. It's never going to end.
That's right. That's right. And thing is, you know, we're on the brink, perpetually on the brink at the moment. You know, let's just start early. Why wait 40,000? You know,
well,
let's just go for
it. I saw a really cool video on YouTube the other day. It was a time lapse footage of the end of the universe. And
okay,
it was 26 minutes long, 30 minutes long, something like that. At about the 4 minute mark, it said that all life is extinguished.
You said it was 26 minutes long, but life is gone 4 minutes in.
Life has gone 4 minutes into it.
Oh, and, okay.
But it's still, it. I think it gave us plenty of room to get past the 41st millennium in that. And then billions and billions of years, you know, time is meaningless.
Mm.
It was interesting.
I guess we won't have to worry about it. We won't have to worry about those extra 22 minutes.
That's something else's problem. I mean, you got to think, though, we'll be smart enough to figure it out by then. We don't
want to not be the ruinous and destructive species that we are.
I got hope, man.
Well, I got some hope. I talked to my nieces and nephews, and I'm like, you guys aren't as dumb as I was when I was your age, so let's fingers crossed.
we're getting better, and you know, look, it's like we're getting better as people. In this episode, we're going to talk about, obviously, some of the new stuff coming out with terrain rules, the Inquisitor that we just got put on the Warhammer community site. It's actually pretty cool. I'm a little bit bummed that they have the best shuriken catapult known to man.
She does.
But
yeah.
We'll get there. In the coming weeks, I have some amazing stuff planned. You can probably guess somewhere in the future, we're going to be talking about a lot more about the new edition with definitive and, you know, answers right in front of us. But I've got even more cool stuff coming up. Please stick with us. Like, share, subscribe, comment and stuff if you haven't already.
I think that was your most thorough and you get these steak knives moment.
I'm so bad about asking for the likes and subs.
But wait, there's more.
But they do mean a lot.
Don't go yet.
And you're not gonna want to miss what we have coming up. That's it. That's my last. That's my hard sell.
It was pretty good. I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
Thank you. Thank you. Later on in the hobby segment, I've actually been building some Scorpus Disintegrators and Dune Riders. And if you were thinking about picking this kit up, or you have some on your shelves and you haven't built them yet, I got some neat tips about how to make them completely modular. You basically need zero magnets. Oh, look, I'm spoiling the hobby segment right now. You need zero magnets. You can make both tanks with all weapon options. But there's just a couple little things you have to do differently than the instructions. And it's pretty cool. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it.
Sounds good.
That was a great show. I'll see you later.
Okay, so this Inquisitor, I like the different humans. I like the exotic humans in the 41st millennium. And I love collecting them. I think they've done a great job with all the rogue traders and various little admech add-ons. And this is no different. Gorgeous model.
Absolutely phenomenal model. Her head has been doing my head in. But since the start, we started talking about this before we started the show. It's Tilda Swinton, isn't it? Her head is just Tilda Swinton, right?
That's not a bad comparison.
For those who don't know, she played the evil witch in Narnia. She played Galadriel in Constantine.
Yeah,
And the ancient one in Doctor Strange.
She's just got that really. That's what I was looking for. That's the picture you should look up, guys, if you want to know what I'm talking about, because that's the bald-headed Tilda Swinton I'm thinking of. So you can get Tilda Swinton in Inquisitor form, and she's here to kick up, take names with her pet birdie.
Yeah. Is the dragon, is that the Shang? Is that the one? Yeah.
The Shang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when a model manifests a smite power, you can select one enemy unit within 18 inches and visible to this model to be affected instead of the closest enemy unit. That is really powerful.
Yeah, she's got a targeted smite. I like it a lot. And also, Shang is just such an awesome name for like the last drink you get at like 3 o'clock before lights on. You walk up, you're like, you just need something to finish you off. Just say, give us a Shang.
I can hear all the puns now. All the puns and then wordplay on this.
That's all I want in the comments. I don't want any good shows, bad shows, just Shang puns.
Well, I mean, smite is already deadly, and it's a good way of, I mean, dealing out mortal wounds is good, but when you can choose the target within 18 inches with a character that you're going to have problems targeting back.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Like, well, I mean, Yeah.
we don't know if she gets one or two powers, do we? Because some of the other Inquisitor powers are extremely good. But
true.
All this means is that she's always going to get value. No matter what power you choose, her smite's always going to be value.
Well, it's right there when you need it. I mean, exactly. Because you're always going to have the smite power. And just being I really need to get an extra wound off that character. Let's say you're taking, you know, an Imperial agent themed force and your Vindicare just didn't get the job done. You got some character dishing out a mighty aura with one wound left.
Mm.
Well, eat it.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
You move, so you're out of
psychic hood range. You don't have to worry about being closest. You just got to be within 18, but you're outside of that 12 for an extra minus one.
Yep. And it lets you can dodge. Is Collector's Assassins are 18 or 12? I think they're 12, aren't they? So you could dodge outside that as well if that's a thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's some play there. Working the Inquisitors into a force seems to always be kind of tricky.
Mm-hmm. But I just think they add a lot of depth, add a lot of fun. They're really a very evocative 30K model as well. There's something that's always been there. Sorry, 40K. I said 30K. There's something that's always been there. I've always felt like they've got a lot of value and a lot of fluff and cool stuff to add.
Yeah, they're very. Everything about them is very 40K because they've got their own agenda. So in a universe that's teeming with war, they've got like a very specific agenda and have been given authority by the Emperor to carry out that whatever that agenda is.
I'd be like, I know you've been talking to the Lorehammer guys. I'd be interested to I don't know, maybe give them a request that they suss out and go through and find out exactly outline what an Inquisitor can and can't do. Because to my mind, like sometimes an Inquisitor just gets to do whatever the hell they want.
They can. And other times, the writ, the Rosette, like Emperor's writ.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're supposed to. But then in other novels I've read, they're just like they're just kind of stunted. And then is it Cadian Blood? Him. And the Commissar. Oh, sorry, no, they shoot the Commissar. Never mind. They shoot the Commissar, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking up.
Oh, man. No, that Rosette really gets them through a lot, right? Like, they get a lot of access, and you see them, and they just show up, and, you know, whether it's Gaunt's Ghost series, I mean, where they are extremely invasive in certain operations, and then in other areas, I mean, like, I feel like the Inquisitors, you know, outside of Exterminatus, like, they could essentially just cut off a whole planet if they wanted, right? Like, with this Rosette, like, this is now, you know, whatever ordo they belong to, we deem we're going to do this, and nobody can do anything about it.
Do you guys remember that there was the fan-made 3D Space Marine stories, like Angels of Death or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
Is that in the last one they did, where there's what I presume to be an Inquisitor kind of praying before the big metal ball thing, and then he kind of goes a bit nuts, and then the Space Marines put him down? See, that's where it gets a bit murky. Like, if that guy,
we don't know if that was he one of his agents, or was it actually the Inquisitor?
Inquisitor, exactly. That's where it gets a bit murky.
Agents can get burnt. Like, those guys can go. Those guys come and go, right?
But yeah, like stuff like that. Could a Space Marine just offer Rogue Inquisitor? Because technically that's what she is. That's what Draxus is. Draxus is kind of a Rogue Inquisitor. She's using alien tech. She like actually kind of respects Xenos, which is unheard of. But she kind of works for the betterment of the Imperium at the same time. So I've always liked her story. And I can't say I'm an expert on it. I've only read a couple of short stories here and there. And most of her stuff is older than my knowledge of the game. Like, she's got fluff going back to, was it first or second ed? Or was she even in Rogue Trader? I'm not even sure if they had.
I'm not sure. She is a long-standing figure, for sure.
She's really, really, really old.
But that's the cool thing about the Inquisitors, in that you know, they have almost like an alignment between the radicalist you know, wing, or the traditional conventional wing, Puritan wing. Yeah. So, you know, if you play that game, Inquisitor, the 40K game, which is almost kind of like 40K Diablo, you can actually choose to either be radical or puritanical. And it's, you know, so she's obviously radical. She's got all the Eldar tech. You know, you can even look at her armor. You know, we were talking about before the show, like, she's probably a head swap away from being an Archon, right?
So, exactly. Like,
I mean, her armor is...
You just sharpen her ears up and she is.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
If you're looking for cool hobby options, Greyfax is also a really good one. I mean, these character models have so much character. I almost said that. And then I was like, it's too funny not to say. I
might. Well, look at that. Isn't that such an interesting character study? Greyfax, she almost like tries to execute Celestine. Freaking Celestine. because she's got angel's wings and she thinks she's a mutant. And that's in Gathering Storm. Like during the fall of Kadias, like she gets released from her Pokeball that Trazine's or whatever's got her in, and she's like, "You've got wings, I should shoot you." And yet there are other Inquisitors who exactly have the same mandate as her, rocking around with like essentially a demon familiar as a hawk, as a pet hawk.
Yep.
I like that juxtaposition. I like that there's that depth in something as obscure and small fluff-wise in the scope of things as what an Inquisitor is, and they've still got that much depth within it. I think that's freaking amazing.
Mm. While I'm here, sitting here cruising the Wyrm community page, I'm willing to bet that this rumor engine thing is Death Guard.
What?
The pipes and yep. the fist and the only thing that throws
well maybe
me off
a fist.
Is...
We don't know that they're related.
Right. We don't know that the Power Fist, the Servo Skull, and the Pipes are related.
And
right?
the Pipes.
Those are the three that we see, man. You just don't know. They get us good with that rumor engine stuff. I like it.
Oh. I think that's one of the most fun things they've done in the last couple of years.
I really liked when the Chaos Demon took over the rumor engine. I had a lot of fun with that.
I do like that when people piece them together. I mean, that's a really good either internet memory or, you know, just a little bit of fact finding after they see a new miniature get fully spoiled that they go through and check it out. It's really nice. It's neat to piece it all together like that.
Yeah.
And I like that some of them are really obvious. And so it gives you like a month out from a release, like, I think it was the Ogre Tyrant, the new Ogre Tyrant model that they put out. That one, they had a bit of a spoil. And I, as an Ogre player, I knew exactly that we were going to get some new Ogre stuff. Had no idea what it was, what it could be. Who knows what knows, that doesn't matter. But I really liked that I knew it was coming, but I didn't know to like what extent or what to expect or when. I just find that stuff, it tickles my fancy a bit. It builds some anticipation.
Yeah, especially when you think it's something like that applies to you like this. I'm just hoping, I'm probably a little bit more wishful thinking than just Death Guard. Because, you know, they've gotten some love recently.
They have, that's true.
Yeah.
I was like, anytime you can breathe some life into a cool model range, I'm down for it.
Same here.
So also coming out with some of the community stuff we've seen leading us towards 9th edition is some terrain rules. So today we got the dense cover that where it's essentially the cover rules we have right now, except that it allows for intervening terrain to factor in. Whereas now... You could be, you know, shooting through the window of 10 buildings lined up to each other and just see a little bit of the model, and then they're not in a situation where they would get the very slim cover rules that we have right now. They wouldn't get covered. That would account for nothing, essentially.
That's right.
And that's difficult to wrap your mind around when you're trying to play, you know, a game that has what you would consider realism in it. Some form of realism, you know. I'm ducked behind this building. I'm not really a static model standing on the space.
Exactly. Well, and that's something that I'd urge everybody to kind of embrace, even though we have been using true line of sight for the long, you know, for quite some time now. But just like you said, you know, the models themselves, you know, to be able to shoot through your own models, even if you have true line of sight drawn from model to model, like that would indicate that abstractly the models are moving, right? Like there's an abstraction there that you're right. Like the model is ducking and it is using the cover. He's not just sitting there. That's why we don't have to worry about facings or anything like that. Like your model can be facing off the table, but technically, you know, well, and abstractly, it's still facing the way it shoots when it shoots and all that. So it's okay. Like I'm cool with it. I'm very cool with moving away from true line of sight in certain regards, given the abstractions that they're adding to terrain. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm fine with it as well. And I think you made the perfect point there. I think we needed to suspend our disbelief in the transition from 7th to 8th when we lost things like facings and things like blast weapons weren't as evocative as they were. But it does feel like we're going back to it quite a bit now, though. It feels like we're getting bits and pieces dropped back in of this is a bit more realism. This is a bit more of how we think things would actually interact, how we think cover might actually work in a game. Like, no, I can't actually just blow up your entire like tank line because I can see part of a tread of a squad. Like I lost three Sentinels because one guy could I think it was a Predator with a kill shot back when people gave a crap about kill shot. Like could see one portion of a base and that guy with kill shot killed all three of them. Because they're a squadron. And so it just stuff like that. I liked it. I had to suspend all my disbelief when I suspended my disbelief with 8th. Like it was I had to spend all of it, you know, and it all got turned off. But I would be happy to have a little bit back, a little bit of my belief.
I've seen some people that have they've mentioned that they think the rule is too complex, too wordy, or we can't really have it both ways. We either have to have terrain rules that are meaningful and have some effect on the game and behave in a way that we think they work, or we're back to having thinner rules. And I think this is a situation that once we do learn it and internalize it, then it just becomes second nature to how we play.
I think there is this worrying thing in a lot of longstanding GW gamers' stomachs where we look at a wordy rule and it just gives us concern. Not because we look at it and it's daunting or it's confusing or things. It's like the more words there are in a rule, the more likely someone is to break it.
Yes.
that's always been my belief.
Someone will try to break it. Someone will try.
Exactly. The more chances it is that I'll have a poor interaction.
Yep.
So I think that's the only bit that worries me. I look at it and it is very wordy. It does a lot of things that I like though. It does a lot of things that make sense to me. Like, I should have to be able to draw a straight line to be able to shoot somebody. Oh, wow. A bullet goes in a straight line. Who would have thought?
Well, you know, the thing that's got me though, and this is what I'm most concerned about, is that it gives, you know, a height thing on if the terrain structure is X high. So I think that we're going to see some folks that have a flag on a building or one tree on a base. And that, look, to be fair, that's really good enough, especially when you have, if you're in a situation to where you define the terrain rules before the game even starts. Like if you're running an event or you and your buddy routinely play against each other, you just know what the terrain is supposed to represent before you start rolling dice.
Correct.
But I could see it now. There's going to be a lot of 3-inch buildings with 2.5-inch flags.
Oh man. That was something that always gave me a bad taste. Like I always felt like I was punished for expressing my models the way I would want them to, like having bigger bases or heroic stances and stuff. Like I remember I was at a tournament and I had a tech marine who had an antenna. He didn't need to have, there's no reason for a tech marine gunner to have an antenna. I just had it on there because it was sick. And I had a 30K I had a 30K backpack and it was awesome.
I understand.
And Vindicare Assassin killed that mofo because he had 2 wounds back then. And I lost my Thunderfire cannon. And I was like, huh, that does not feel right.
So this dense cover, subtract 1 from hit rolls made for ranged weapons if at least 3 inches tall.
Yep.
I haven't measured, but I have to believe that the Citadel would, like the older ones, I think they're probably about 3 inches tall.
I think they do go higher than 3 for sure, at least.
Yeah.
A standard single level building is 3 inches, yeah? Like J-Dub's always said, it's 3 inches coherency up, or was it 6 inches?
Well, no, but that's been a rule of convenience of how to get up one level or another. And and now we're past that. Now we're in just, you measure the actual distance.
Yeah, fair enough. So I guess there's a lot of people are going to be, I walk up to a game table and the first thing I do before I even decide what the terrain is, I got to measure everything.
You measure, or it could be putting your thing right down. Oh, this is 2.5, doesn't count. This is, you know.
Yeah. Although I would assume within a couple of months, maybe 6 months of the thing, every like most pieces of terrain will be either ruled to be like if it's 2.8 inches, don't be the guy who says doesn't offer anything.
So I just pulled up. I've been working on some of the terrain from the new fantasy. I'm trying to remember the name. I'm sitting here looking at the box and I can't remember.
The Cities of Sigmar or the
yeah. Yeah, so it's Cities of Sigmar stuff for that new kind of like Necromunda game they have, right? For fantasy, for Age of Sigmar.
Oh, Warcry.
Warcry, sorry, my bad. Duh, of course. So I actually have tons of that terrain around that I love that I've been sitting here painting with contrast and everything. And I just measured it, and it is exactly what Adam just described. It is like 2.8. And if I put it on, as I plan to put it on MDF and use it, I'm definitely going to use that and say, declare that as 3 inches.
Yeah. Well,
as an event run.
As an organizer, it needs to be probably in your packet. Now, look, I'm not trying to put a bunch of onus and extra steps on an organizer, but I think that it you're going to solve so, like, if we are trying to speed the game up, and I think that's at least part of the design that we're going for in this next edition, and with all these additional levels of complexity between obscuring terrain, dense cover, who knows what else is going to come. Just have it written down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you take that debate out between the players.
Correct.
Yeah, I think tournament organizers will just make a ruling, like either that or you'll find like terrain, because I know people in my local clubs and stuff, they have a bunch of terrain, and it doesn't matter what size or thing it is, those guys will make sure that it makes a meaningful impact on the game. You know, we're not going to have tables of terrain that, because they're the wrong sizes, they don't do anything.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, that's fair. I think that's really good, especially if there's a ramp up period of if people are actually trying to achieve this, or you know, as they're building, you know, getting plastic kits as their budget allows and whatever. There's no reason. We're already playing a slightly abstract game,
right?
I mean, just we are already playing an abstract game. There's yes. no reason not to label it. This is a ruin. Same thing. Well, this is a ruin. This is a hill. I get it. Hills don't have rules, but we're going to give you a +1 cover or something. I mean, call it a forest, you know, do whatever you got to do to make your game playable.
Yeah. And I think there's been a lot of emphasis put on that with 9th edition. It's a lot of quality of life improvements.
That's a good way of saying it. Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. It's just like, I'm going to be able to get more out of my units. I think we had a bit of a golden age in 8th edition for about a 6 to 9 month period post Castellan and pre Marines. That was just like this beautiful world where anything had a chance, you know. Then Marines came along, and then nothing but Iron Hands had a chance, and it was a horrible time. But I feel like there's a lot of emphasis to put back on to get where that is. Like, firstly, like the Psychic Awakening has been doing a great job. Like, I mean, admittedly, some stuff has been a bit bemoaned. Some stuff has not gotten possibly the treatment it deserved.
You can say Jesus or cults. It's fine.
I was going to say, Jizz. At the same, I feel like T-Sons didn't get enough to warrant them feeling like you wanted to make them a standalone army. And now 9th edition is telling you you're so much better off if you're a standalone army. Some other stuff like Orcs didn't get a huge amount, but if so, buts, doesn't matter. I think on the whole, I think they've done an amazing job with it.
I know that Marines, I mean, everyone knows how well like Imperial Space Marines have done recently, but I genuinely feel pretty good about Power Armor, no matter what flavor it is, with what I've seen about 9th so far.
Well, you know, I'm just gonna put it out there. Everyone, watch out for sisters. Everyone, just watch out for sisters.
Silence or battle?
Battle. I actually have not looked at the Sisters of Silence rules yet, but hopefully they're
good.
Fantastic.
They look good. I think, you know, talking about some of the stuff that could be out there with custodes and whatnot, I think Sisters of Silence still look good. I don't think that there's something to necessarily dismiss out of hand. But I can see what you're saying in regards of, you know, Sisters of Battle can kind of mask like the guard can, but they've still got that power armor save, and they've got some durability between all of, and some real flexibility with their faith dice if that carries forward. But I tell you what, you know, this terrain stuff, we talk about you know, dense cover, but they're, you know, they've also talked about like light and heavy cover, right? And talking about abstractions,
barricades,
you know,
stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, barricades. Well, and so with heavy cover, you know, that's the one that's melee focused, right? That's the one that if you get into heavy cover in melee, it gives +1 to armor save. But there's an exception to it. And I thought this was a really good point that was brought up to me by a friend of mine in regards that, so the charging unit that goes into heavy cover, if it charged in that turn, its target doesn't receive the benefit from heavy cover. But it doesn't really say anything else from that. And of course, you know, we don't have the rule book in front of us they don't explain it or whatnot. They just say that's what happens. And going into the abstractions, you remember when you used to have initiative and you used to require grenades to get into charge into terrain, but they've kind of built that into the system already by not giving people that benefit with heavy cover. There's just something interesting that was pointed out that I can kind of see the abstraction there, that you assume when you charge, you're going to, you know, whatever it is, whether it's spores from Tyranid or grenades from Space Marines and Guard or whatnot, but they use something to kind of suppress the enemy, reducing that defensive benefit they have from heavy cover as you charge in. And then
point.
It resumes as normal, right?
I'd forgotten about that grenades bit.
Right? Like we used to have that. That used to be something that we had in there, but it's since gone away and you no longer have to worry about that concept. But they've at least added something in there with heavy cover that makes that kind of make sense now.
Yeah, it's a good point about the sisters too. I mean, I was in the back of my mind thinking like Thousand Suns, Chaos Space Marines, and things like Death Guard and that kind of stuff. You know, heck, Berserkers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just with terrain that makes, again, that has this element of you can actually hide things and you don't have to make up additional rules than just what the terrain already has. Mm. I think we're going to see a little bit more tactical play, things actually having to move to shoot. I mean, there's nothing more frustrating than a gun line army lining up and then basically having to make no decisions in the movement phase.
Yes.
And I don't think we're going to have that. I think there's going to be this. I mean, with some effort on our side, we got to kind of make it happen. We got to set the stage for this to happen. But we could set the stage easily by just naming the terrain for our tables as we work towards whatever the new standard is.
And if you've got a local club, like legit within like a month, you'll know every like if you play regularly, legit within a month, you'll know what every piece of terrain is. Everyone will have agreed on what's what. It's just not going to be. It's not going to be a huge deal, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going to embrace the new rules. I think that the rules of the past terrain have almost been like optional. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, I've gotten real frustrated in the past where no one's playing a forest the right way until you roll just the right amount for a charge. And then they're going to go, oh, let me go check the rule book and figure out what that forest is supposed to
Yeah, no, that used to be one of my things with some of the events that I organized or ran, that I would remind people that there are actually more than two terrain types in the rule book. They actually have different effects if you use them appropriately. So.
Yeah, and Eighth, it was just written just so almost like really optional, you know, and I think this is going to be but the terrain figures, the terrain pieces themselves, if, you know, we've often referred to them as the third player in the game. And it seems like they're going to be that way this time, so, for real.
I'm just happy barricades will do something. Like it was like, all right, so you had your usually your big or either L's or something decent in the middle of the table that made a difference, and then hopefully one to two pieces in your deployment zone that made the difference, and then there was all this scattering of craters and barricades and fences and stuff that literally did nothing except stop my Lehman Russes from having fun. So I'm more than happy for those things to actually make a freaking difference. I'm just so happy. Remember a barricade in 7th edition?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a thing. Like, airy terrain was a thing. Going to ground in a crater was a thing.
You could block off. Knights couldn't walk across Promethean pipes or something like that. I mean,
apparently they're changing that. I heard G-Dub say that they're doing some stuff to make... I guess this would be another quality of life improvement for things like knight players, where you can't. What a mate of mine used to do was he'd take one Biovore to every event. He would move the Biovore and then shoot it at the knight, miss, and put and roadblock the knight with a single spore mine in front of the knight, and then the knight had to, at minimum, if it could just go straight around, it would still waste like 2 or 3 inches going around the spore mine. And you're like, that's just.
Talk about a fun sponge is what the
yeah. But I mean, like, you know, he was one of the best tournament players that I've ever seen.
No, look, you have to take advantage of that stuff in that situation. I'm not saying don't do it, and I'm also not saying that stuff won't be in this edition. I'm just saying that it seems to me that this stuff will be a little bit more quantified and accessible, and we'll be trying to integrate it into our games because it will enhance the experience instead of taking it out or ignoring it.
Yeah, well said.
Well, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about what we know, what we don't know, speculate about what we don't know, and then I'll retell you the secrets about the Scorpius Disintegrator. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Adam, you mentioned something about, you know, I was talking about Power Armor, you mentioned Sisters. You know, what has you so excited about going into this new edition with them?
Firstly, models, miniatures, models. Is there a bad model in that range? No. Like, is there a reason not to play Sisters? Nah. They can. And the reason I'm excited for them for 9th is because, firstly, they've got a very good codex that I don't think has gotten as much respect as it probably should have, and which I will blame on Space Marines. And they're about to get a Psychic Awakening buff, and we know how pivotal Psychic Awakening was for Marines. So you think about what Psychic Awakening did for them. You got the super chaplains, you got the super librarians, and you got the super apothecary, which literally broke the game. Between that and the Leviathan, they broke the game completely. So I'm of the opinion that, I really think Sisters are in a very, very good place and very poised to do well in the next edition. Another reason I think so is because they're an army that can actually do everything. Like, is there a playstyle they can't go for?
No, you know, I think you can mimic just about anything you want to do. If you want to be fighty, you can find units or find miracles and stratagems that help you be fighty.
Yeah, and you can. I liken them to guard that can fight. Like, they're not quite as good as Space Marines, like especially than what Space Marines are now. But if you get Guardsmen and you added a lot more flexibility in the combat phase, not just having like Bulgren as your only answer, like, because they've got Zeraphim and Seraphim. And
Zeraphim they're really good.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. They look solid. I mean, they're just fantastic looking models. And I think you're right on it, Adam, in regards of them being able to do everything. And that's where I would double tap in regards of Sisters, that I think they should do everything. I don't think players should focus one way or the other. I think that they really have the tools available, and they're at least right now in 8th, and I assume going forward into 9th, for the most part, we don't know necessarily for points, but I do think they're going to still be pretty cost efficient given where they're at. But I do think between the Zeraphim and the Repentia that those two units are really going to be able to flesh out their melee side, where they've already got really strong shooting. I totally would run with everything available to them.
Yeah, and on top of that, they've got smashy characters. Like, you can make a Canonist that's an absolute behemoth. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, Celestine has never been a joke. She's still absolutely no joke.
Yeah, I've played with her since the new model came out, the new rules. It's a real... Now, granted, it was better with the double move type stuff for real, but still, yeah. The fact that the reoccurring nightmare that she can be...
Well, and for, you know, we were talking about the survivability of power armor and everything. That Canonist and Celestine alone can cut through swaths of power armor. I mean, they're very effective, and not just being a scalpel, but also being a hammer.
Yeah, I just think they're an army that can do it all. They're starting to get, I'm not going to say they're as powerful as something like what I believe New AdMech is, but I think they're actually a very well-rounded book, and I think they are poised to really shine this edition.
I think it's a little bit better than well-rounded. I mean, to both of y'all's point, that they're more of a scalpel, I think. I mean, obviously a T3 model is hard. Mm. Sometimes you just wilt under the weight of dice. But with their ability to put pressure exactly where they're needed via miracle dice and some reliability of just their overall stratagems, power armor, and command point rerolls, I think they're the reason you hit it on the nail or on the head before, the reason they have a breakout is because Space Marines.
Literally, Space Marines have been so keeping everybody down.
And then the new model, I mean, people having to ramp up for the new models and everything else. And so, you know, I think the longtime Sisters players had were in a point where they'd kind of faded away from competition play, playing some other things. Not all of them. The James and folks at the LVO this past year, we saw them out using those models. They didn't have time to bloom and to really, you know, what is it, percolate a strong list up to the top, because it was just so easy to play Iron Hands or Raven Guard.
Dead set. And because you could just make an Iron Hands list that does everything that they do. But I think there are generals like dream army at the moment. And I really like it. Just seems like every new army that that GW brings out, whether it's AdMech or Sisters or Marines or whatever, it's getting fleshed out, and fleshed out in a really, really positive way, where they do have a bit of everything. And I just think that's a testament to GW's new design philosophies and how well-rounded they want the game to be.
Well, I'm digging it, especially the dual kits and things. Although exactly. I'm not really endorsing going out and getting Sisters. The actual Sisters of Battle squads are in short supply out there right now.
Yeah, still.
Well, they seem to, our people are gobbling them up.
Good.
So if you're thinking about it and you see them, grab them, because some people may be planning the same thing we're talking about.
And so... The ignoring minus two. So if you think about the reasons why we think NIDs and Orcs and GSC and things like this might be in a bit of trouble in 9th edition, that being, you know, blast weapons are getting possibly exponentially more effective, and a bunch of other things across the board as well. On top of the fact that it doesn't look like troops are as required as before. If you give me somebody in the chat will probably point this out to me, and I want them to. Somebody tell me a blast weapon that is -3 rend that you can take en masse, because that's actually the profile you're going to need if you're going to want to kill 100 sisters in a game of 40k now. Because the ignore -2, I think they might be one of the only armies out there that can still get away with taking massed bodies.
Yeah, even with the what is a stock line sister. Point cost 9 points.
I think it was 9 points, either 9 or 10, or it could even be 8. Someone will tell us.
Yeah, I'll figure it out here in a second.
Our loving fans will correct.
Totally unprepared for this conversation.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of just launched into this one. I got a bit of an epiphany and being like, sisters are really good, guys. And no. Everyone was like, you're right, Adam. Sisters are really good. Let's talk about that.
Well, no, I mean, I think the Zephyrim, they've been a standout favorite of mine since we talked about them the first time. I mean, they just have, if you get them into combat, they're going to slice and dice stuff. And then with the ability to, you know, when we hear about the new vehicle rules, and then you start thinking about the sisters have all these new vehicles like the Immolator. I mean, they're not new, but, you know, cool looking new vehicles. And then the Penitent engines and stuff. I mean, I think you're going to be able to use them in every phase of the game. And so an army list builder could play for that, could build it into that. And we're talking about the turn rules before. You're taking some pressure off of them in the first couple of turns of the game, maybe because you're benefiting from some 5-inch obscuring terrain or just generic line of sight blocking stuff. And so you get to set up the game. And then if we're having shorter or smaller table spaces, then flamers are like you're getting a free round of positioning with things that had shorter ranges before. So I think last week I spaced on aggressors. I don't know why I couldn't remember the Space Marine aggressors is the only one that doesn't start with an I or something. You know,
that's true.
But those things, the stuff that's been, you know, it feels like you just never got to get the effectiveness out of them because they had an 18-inch or a 12-inch range. It's a different game now, or will be.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I see. Exactly right. Things that were like in that 18 to 24-inch range, or might even go bigger, 18 to 36-inch range, I think just got really, really saucy. And this is a big reason why I think Necrons are just going to love this edition, man. Like all they had Doomsday Arcs that could reach the backboard edge before this. And now so much more of their stuff has got the option.
Yeah. I mean, plus we don't know if folks are going to be able to get more liberal use of reserves.
Yeah, that's very true. And here's a little, I don't know, more of an observation. I don't really know what kind of credence this has. Supposedly Horde armies being on the decline. People are saying the new rules will negatively impact flyers, which I think is good. Flyers should not have been possibly represented in the game the way that they were recently, where you take, at ATC this year, sorry, last year, I played Andrew Chu from Team America, and he had 11 flyers. I'm going to go out on the record and say he had between 9 and 11 flyers. That was literally his whole army. Then he had a Guardian bomb and characters. That's not an army I think many people enjoy anything to do with. I'm not sure he enjoyed it. Like, he was just like, yeah, it's going to win. We're at WTC, man. I'm going to win. But here's the thing, yeah? If Horde armies are on the decline, guys, you're never going to need to fly off the board with your flyers. If there's so many less models to take up that board space, staying on the board's never going to be easier.
I don't know that Horde armies are actually going to be in decline. And what we've seen is that tanks are going to be able to fire into the unit that they're firing. It's going to be very difficult to prevent a tank from doing damage in the shooting phase, and that's fine. Yep. But I'm not convinced that mass bodies on the table aren't still going to be a good thing. We're going to run into the same situation. I did check, by the way. A battle sister is 9 points.
You're up first time. Nice.
But you still need bullets to take care of this stuff. And if things are getting on the regular -1 to hit because of some feature, or they just can't see it, then, you know, that's 33, you know, what is it? That's 10% less opportunity to remove those models. And since everything's going up in points, you know, by 15-20%, I guess that'll be a wash. Let's assume that things go up in points equally across all levels. So
sure.
Sorry
sure.
I brought that.
Yeah.
We don't know that's the case, but let's, I mean, we'll, for the point of this example, we'll look at that. But better terrain rules, more liberal minuses to hit, and not everything gets to ignore that neg one on terrain and stuff. Like vehicles won't get the neg one, but if the terrain applies it, the neg one, isn't that back to being a neg one?
Yeah, it is. It's the same difference. And I think there is something to say about the negs changing. I think we've been a bit spoiled. I think people are not realizing how good just neg one to hit is.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody can do the math for me. Like, what is it?
It's just 17% straight, better than being shot
without 17%. It. Yeah, exactly right. I really think we've been spoiled because people are like, oh, neg one's crap because I could have neg three. And why wouldn't you? But man, there's neg one is nothing to sneeze at.
Well, everything gets to ignore that neg one. That's where I'm going. And so I think things are adding up to maybe the format of what a horde army is and the support characters you take change, but I don't think they're going to disappear. Sorry, Red, I may have jumped in.
No. I think you're right. And I think, I mean, this point that you've been making is huge in regards that why were 11 flyers so good? Well, because you couldn't attack them, right? You couldn't melee them unless you had fly as well. And they're all minus one to hit. And then, of course, if they're Eldar and they're outside of 12 inches, they're additional minus one to hit. And they had a stratagem, which made them another minus one to hit. So one of those flyers could be minus three to hit. Generally, all of them were at least minus one, and most or half to whatever extent were minus two. But they're getting rid of all that, right? So we're just, you can't, no longer can you have more, at least from what I'm tracking from their stream and what they've said with the release coming up in 9th, is you can't have more than a negative one to hit. And so there's no more of this stacking benefit deal.
Let me go one more step. I mean, this is theory craft, and I don't know if this has been addressed yet or not, but does it become a bidding war? You're like, well, I'm gonna make myself neg one. All right, well, I'm gonna give myself plus one, so they're canceled out. All right, well, I'm gonna do my thing that he gives me another neg one. Okay, well, I'm gonna see that and raise you a plus
one. I think it does. I think it is. I think you're right. Like, I think that it becomes this bouncing back and forth within that. And there is, in some cases, you'll see that. You'll see where some of the min-maxing players will be able to go back and forth to a certain extent. And that's the benefit, right? Like, I mean, good on them to a certain point. But are you willing to pay the increased points that a flyer is worth where they get no benefit? Like you're saying, you know, you're going to be able to hide models on the ground behind some of this terrain, period. You don't even need to worry about a minus one to hit in some cases. And so there's just different benefits to it. I think flyers are still good because they had that minus one across the board. But, you know, you think about Raven Guard or Alpha Legion or whatnot, like those guys don't need to necessarily be in terrain either. They're just going to get that benefit to cover, but you can't go more than a minus one to whatever extent, of course, unless you get in that bidding war that you mentioned. But that aspect of the game has kind of been leveled. And by leveled, I don't mean removed. I'm saying that the playing field has been leveled across the armies. It's not just flyers and stacking massive, you know, no longer the Nurgle minus three to hit unit or whatnot. Some of those benefits, the stratagems like Cloud of Flies and whatnot, are going to be huge because that just completely removes the ability to shoot it. But like what you're saying, Paul, that's 16% chance. In our new understanding of going into 9th, if you'd never played 8th before, that 16-17% chance is just enough to make it a big deal. Those of us that were spoiled back in the day of minus two, minus three to hit, we're going to have to adjust our own perspectives to just minus one.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think that was really well said, mate.
Yeah, I'm with you. Exactly, 100%. I'm with you. So it all leads up to again, I'm not saying it's going to be a beautiful world, and all army list types are going to be the best and viable, all fighting for that A1 slot. It's not. There obviously will be some winners and losers out of this. I just think it's too soon to discount the horde, even with vehicles getting the buff to shooting and stuff. I mean, they have to be alive to shoot.
Well, I just think from an attrition point of view, like I said, Battle Sisters and things with invulnerable saves. Like, I can't see Plague Bearers being a bad choice. I can't see you taking a blob of 20 Plague Bearers to literally just meat shield for your characters and sit on objectives. I can't see you being like, I wish I didn't take those. I wish they were. I still can't see anybody looking at like a Plague Bearer and wishing it was a Demonette. You know, it's just not a thing. or a Cultist, even. Like, a Cultist is just. It's just not going to be a bad deal for the they've already said they're going up to 6 points a model. But in relation to things, like, are you going to be sad about your 30 Fearless Cultist or 20 Fearless Cultist? I'm sorry, the 20 now. I don't feel like it. I don't feel like you're going
to
be bad.
Well, with the changes to targeting characters, you know, you're going to have to have, potentially have to factor in needing more the whatever the cheapest expendable unit is to maybe protect a support character. You're going to have a little bit of more layered defense. It's no longer just, it's not the closest you can't shoot at it. Is it the closest and within 3 inches of something that can screen it?
Yeah. And so I guess when I talk about Horde, the archetype I'm talking about is something akin to, I don't know if the Gaunt Carpet was a thing where you guys were, but the Gaunt Carpet won just about every event it was taken to in Australia. Mind you, it was taken by one, like, probably one of the best players in the world, to my mind. It literally won everything it went to. And it won everything it went to because on turn two, everything you had was wrapped and tapped. And then it had, apart from the guys that were wrapped and tapped, that it still had like 200 dudes to on every objective. Like, and then past that, the things that were getting wrapped, the turn after they were wrapped, they were getting killed by Old One Eye or a couple of Brood Lords or smited to death. But
I miss the old plague zombie days. Like, this Typhus and, 120 plague zombies.
See, those are the ones I can't see existing now. They might. I might be completely wrong. But that full polarized archetype of, hey, I'm just literally taking bodies, more than bodies, and you've got bullets. Because with tanks shooting into combat now, that ratio changes considerably, the amount of bullets that I have available.
And plague zombies can't kill anything. Like, orcs, they have the potential to beat something down and kill it, whereas some of this other stuff we're talking about does not. And so it will not remove the piece.
Yes.
So that piece will be there to shoot at you in the next phase and remove your bodies.
Yeah, well, if you wrap, 30 termagants around a, 2 Lehman Russes, usually that's game for that Lehman Russ. That Lehman Russ is out of the game. But now in 2 or 3 turns, those 2 Lehman Russes have killed all those Gaunts. And it's all of a sudden that problem you thought was solved is not solved at all. Well, so that's what I mean about that archetype. I don't think it solves the problems like it used to now.
I mean, leaning into the, I know I'm building a case for Hordes and I'm going to feel real sorry about it if it comes out. But I mean, think about Overwatch. I mean, the prospect of a 10 or 15 man orc unit charging a Lehman Russ Punisher was super grim. Mm. And now Overwatch is going to be a stratagem. Yeah. And while it's safe to assume that the Tau will probably get some rework that allows their Overwatch trick to continue to work or something.
I don't know. They're going to have to, or they're just going to need a completely new codex.
But Guard don't have anything like that.
No, I'm a little concerned. I will say that, like, it does seem fine that I need to pay for my Lehman Russ to shoot, and then I pay another CP and it shoots on fives. I feel like that's okay. But that does mean things like, so there's Mordian, which is Mordian Imperial Guard Regiment has bonuses to Overwatch in it. And now that seems a little redundant.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Absolutely garbage.
Well,
Not that you saw Mordian anywhere. Like, I've never, as a long-standing Imperial Guard player, I've never played the Mordian regiment.
That rule, though, that let some target characters, it's so strong. Like, you get a bunch of plasma gunners.
It was pretty cool, yeah.
It was like the dream of it was pretty cool for a minute.
For a hot minute,
and then I realized I'm never playing anything but Catechins. I've got this
Catechins and Talan has been, and Cadians, of course, have been what I played. Whenever I feel like chaos is too strong in my meta, I just bring the Cadians out, and they all learn the error of their ways.
I was thinking earlier that's why you like the barricades, because in the Wall of Martyrs it's got the Cadian bodies there.
Yeah. Good boys. In the process, I'm going to be revamping my Cadians for the new edition. So I've got a bunch of the Forge World Enviro Hazard Cadians. Like, by a bunch, I mean like I've got 100 of them. But I've always been of the mind that I wanted them to become my Scions. Like, these are the guys that are left from Cadia. They're the guys who like fought on Cadia, made it out, and now they've been equipped with like the best the Guard has to offer, which admittedly is not much.
Another rubber gas mask. Here, go fight.
Exactly.
The Chaos Waste.
But they're set out to, get their revenge. Do the best they can to get revenge for Cadia. And so I think I'll be revamping them when I get a chance. I'll be doing some new bases up for them and lots of other bits and pieces.
That's cool. And they've got the similar bulk that the old Kasserkins had.
Exactly. Because that's what they evoke for me. They always, those Enviro Hazard units, they had the masked faces. They had the supercharged backpacks. I mean, the only thing they don't have that the Kasserkins have is they don't have a cable going from their backpack to their gun. That's literally the only
you could make that with a little green stuff. I've got a way of making cables that is, it's like you need zero skill. It's a tool.
I will take you up on that, because I probably will need to do 80 to 90 of these, and I'm not sure I've got it in me. But we'll see. I'm open to it.
I mean, you make cables in your sleep with this thing. It's awesome.
Wow, somebody's a genius. Putting
that there. So Hordes, not dead. Don't write them out. Don't write them off just yet. Wait till we get some more rules before.
like everything, I think they're just going to pivot. It's just going to be a pivot, and someone somewhere will find some crazy Horde stuff that'll shut my big mouth.
Well, again, if we talk about like with the ability to what counts as coming in from reserves or being, you know, alternate deployment expands to where it's not just stratagem based or the armies that can do it. You know, if it goes back to more of that old school reserve special rule where if it's in the mission, then some units can do it or something. Who knows? But if that changes, you know, you might get surprised by, you know, heck, Snickerot may make a comeback for all we know.
Snickerot is a legend. That model is still awesome. That model is still awesome. It's still good.
You get that pincer maneuver. I'm telling you, with things being closer together, you could have somebody come in from the table edge, somebody coming up from the middle. I think it's look. I'm more wishful thinking at this point.
I like it,
but
I enjoy wishful thinking.
I wouldn't count it out. Well, let's jump to that hobby segment I was talking about. Look, I already know that I spoiled it and spilled the beans, but I'm going to tell you the tricks to make your Scorpus Disintegrator into a Scorpus Dune Rider, completely modular, without any magnets at all. You just got to be smart with the gluing.
But Paul, isn't AdMech a subpar army? Surely I wouldn't want to buy one of these toaster tanks.
Oh, but the tanks? This thing's got all kind of guns, man. Talk about not counting things out. I think we're going to see a massive return of the Cataphrons. And I'm willing to bet that we're also going to see armies in transports doing a lot better. You know, y'all know the way I feel. If you can get a transport with more than two guns on it for 100-ish points, you know, whatever, for below what it, I guess, for good value. I don't know what the points are going to be, but if you can get a transport or a tank with multiple guns on it for a decent point value, then you need to, that's a unit to watch.
Agreed. I was being entirely and completely facetious there. AdMech, I'm absolutely terrified of AdMech. I think they are looking ridiculously good.
Yeah, like, the robots. It's going to be good times. Like, people are going to be happy they made their work on back in the day, I think.
Oh, yeah, the war convocation's coming back. And, man, I was looking... So I've been toying with playing some knights, and I'm looking at the buffs that the AdMech book gave to knights, and, oh, yeah, there's some buffs in there, man.
So with this Scorpus kit, how you assemble it is pretty much like a rhino. It goes together very similar to a rhino. So completely easy, up until the point where you get the main hull built and you're about to attach that front facing. So the Dune Rider has like the World War II style assault boat thing, you know, the beach lander type thing to it. And you are, in the instructions, supposed to glue the two things with like the troop slots for their visors to the main hull, and then keep the door where it can kind of float up and down, you know, open and close. But if you glue the hull extensions with the crew visor slots, or the payload, the people payload visor slots to the door, that whole housing there then becomes modular. It will just simply slot into the well, the part there that is the gap that you would glue it into, or that it would hinge on. From the transport.
Oh, I found this a revelation. Like Paul sent me pictures, guys, and I was looking at it, I'm like, that actually makes a lot of sense. When you, as soon as you know that it can be done, you're like, it looks like it, you should be able to, it just looks like it's supposed to be done that way.
Yeah, the instructions tell you to glue, I mean, whatever, they're instructions for building the specific model. If you're looking at it a little bit differently, you know, that's one of the first changes that you would make. For the Disintegrator, the front housing for that with like the missiles or whatever in it, where it looked like missiles, you leave that off and you glue what would be the Rhino top hatch, the place where the gun housing goes, to that missile compartment looking thing. And then that becomes your complete modular thing that just slots on and slots off. The one compromise you have to make is, well, I guess in this, there's two compromises you have to make. And one of them is trimming off. There's a ladder that on the transport one, you glue a ladder back by the door that looks like it goes into the rest of the compartment. You have to trim the top off of that. So the part, the the fairing or whatever that attaches it to the roof, you have to clip that off or the top compartment won't fit. But I can tell you, even after staring at this kit for days, you're never going to miss that part.
I think this is an absolute revelation. I'm not quite sure. Like, how much does this model cost in American dollars?
$70, something like that.
Yeah, well, it's clear over 100 here. And people out there who are wanting to run 5 and 6, you know, Doomstriders in their army, it's almost non-feasible. But being able to do this with 3 of them, meaning that those, if you buy 5, you can use them all 5 as transports, or you can have a couple of gunboats and the transports as well. I think this is just an amazing bit of knowledge to have.
That's the other compromise you have to make is for the turret. So the kit comes with one servitor that is the gunner for the tank. If you build the turret for the Scorpus Dune Rider without it, you don't need it. Like, nothing about where the weapons sit requires this figure to be in place. If you put anything in that spot, a searchlight from the Lehman Russ you never attached, a smoke launcher from the Rhino you never glued on because you didn't want to paint that extra bit. Like, if you put that in the spot where this dude sits, you will never, ever think anything else was supposed to be there.
Yeah, I really appreciate when GW kind of leaves some of those, like you pointed out, kind of quick loopholes where you can still maintain the modularity of the model regardless without taking something away or making it so obvious that it looks like you had to do that in order to, you know, maintain this convenience, really. So it's always nice when you can figure those things out.
The gun option to where it's the longer gun or the shorter gun, it has a little nub that just inserts into the gun housing. So you can sub that out at your complete leisure.
That's fantastic.
Again, well, without needing a magnet.
Mind you, I don't know any time you're not going to be using the line of sight gun, which I think is the shorter one, the Belarus energy cannon. I don't even know what the other gun does.
It's string 7 or something. I think it's a D6 shot. String 7 gun, so it's not terrible.
Yep, it's fair. It's just the line of sight shooting is just so strong.
Oh yeah, agreed. But you do need the servitor for the turret on the transport option. If you were to not include him on that, it would look a little bizarre. There is the place where that turret sits for the transport. There, it comes with a hatch that would fit on that. If you're using the tank option, that hatch also fits in there kind of snugly. You don't need a glue. You don't need to glue it, or you don't need a magnet for that. I'm telling you, this kit's very well designed, completely modular.
Everything GW has put out in like the last probably 4 years, since I'll just say since Nagash. Since Nagash, everything's been gold as far as I'm concerned.
That's fair. Yeah, that's...
Except for that Meldar terrain.
Oh, yeah.
That Meldar forest.
I think that made it through the pipeline at a weird time. That's,
but yeah, it looks like something from 15 years ago.
So I'm putting together several of these tanks, and yeah, being able to either have, you know, the 5, 6, 7 transports and then without even skipping a beat, turn them into the tanks if I wanted to, it has been you stretch that hobby dollar.
Mm.
And this is so easy to do. Like, I mean, I've been building models for a long time. So there's that, but that's the only skill that I just have skill in building the models. But now that you know how to do it, it requires zero skill. And it's just being selective about where you glue some of the pieces. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention one more compromise. On the tank version, there's like a cow catcher on the front of it. You might not be able to put that on there.
But how will they catch cows in the 41st millennium?
You know, I guess you just got to lower that scoop. Just going to get mighty crowded in that crew compartment.
Just can't have it all, can you?
Life's
just not fair.
I think especially once these are painted, you're really not going to feel like you made any compromises. I just wanted to point it out along the way. So when you're looking at the instructions, I don't know, I'm pleased with how they're turning out. I've posted these pictures on my Twitter and Instagram, so you can see what I'm talking about. Or tell you what, if you go to the newly designed Forge Narrative website, forgenarrative.net, my Twitter feed and Instagram feed are on there, and you can see them without having to go to Twitter and Instagram.
What a world.
Right? I'm plugging everything. I know I plugged the liking and sharing and stuff in the early part of the show. I'm trying to get better about that, but I try to promise not to make it obnoxious, everybody. But those 5-star reviews really help. That's how I sleep at night.
Yeah, on a bed of 5-star reviews.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about today. I mean, we're getting these drip drops of news information, and it's such an exciting time. But I'm in that stage now. I mean, this is like what I call like my perfect state of 40K homeostasis.
Yeah, my whistle has been well and truly wet. I want to play the game now. I don't want to wait any longer. Like the little drip drops we're getting, I'm getting over eager now. Like close to like, just give me it already.
We get to have. You know? I'm going to do another big term. We get to have like the Schrodinger's cat of army list. Is it good? Is it viable or is it dead?
It could be both. Is that the first time anybody has referred to like Schrodinger's cat in 40K like terminology?
We're breaking ground.
Surely that's the first ever.
Look, we got to get. We're having to recharge ourselves for the next time we start doing commentary, Adam.
That's right. Or where they've Pavlov. I've gone too far down the Pavlov dogs route. My mouth will only water now. I can't turn off the mouth watering. I need to eat.
Oh my, Red, get us out of this. So you actually got a hobby project you're working on as well.
Oh yeah. You know, and I'm interested, Adam. You know, hearing you mention Guard and everything. I have I'd say it's a super secret project, but I know I've mentioned it here before and elsewhere. Yeah, so I'm working on making Gaunt's Ghosts Tanith first and only army right now. I have it all sorted out. I sent a picture to Paul, and as I get it set up, I'll start getting some better pictures. But I mean, we are talking, and I have to, you know, I give some sincere credit to a friend of mine that gave me that gifted me significant part of this. But man, I'm so excited to get into these Gaunt's Ghosts. Like I'm trying to figure out exactly where to fit. So if you're familiar with the lore and where they've come from in the book, there's legacy units that I want to maintain. And so I'm laying all these models out. I'm laying all the, I've got, you know, old Tanith models. I have the actual Gaunt, you know, Gaunt model. I have his little group of guys that go with him. But I want to make the squads. I want to be able to have the legacy units. So there's, you know, in the book Straight Silver, I'm kind of going back to when they were in the kind of trench warfare, which, you know, Gaunt was not happy about them being used for trench warfare. Mm. And that was shortly after the Vervenhive merger that they had. So you don't just have the Tanith, but you also have some of the Vervenhivers, which I've got Orlok gangers, and I even have some, you know, again, some of those models that were gifted to me. I have old Necromunda models from like 1996 that I'm bringing into this to kind of give that ganger feel to it as well. But then I also want to be able to make, if you've read any of the newer stuff, I'm kind of taking it, I'm looking at building the army in its current setting, its prime setting, where Gaunt is, I mean, essentially a general. And I've already got Scions set up. I'm going to make his little detail of Scions that he has. I'm really excited. I mean, I'm supercharged to get this project underway.
Sounds incredible. Like, are you aiming for a certain size army, or are you just going to keep doing it? It doesn't matter how many points it is. You're just doing it until it feels right.
Yeah. So that, you know, I looked at it, and I actually went through the books, you know, the rosters. I have all of the characters labeled out. Like I have models tied to some of the characters specifically from the books. Like I said, you know, even some of those I won't spoil, but some of the models that characters that have passed away, you know, whether in killed in action or for one reason or another, I've got them all lined out. I have the Saint. I'm going to use Celestine. I'm going to mod it up to make the Saint from the book, Saint Sabbat. And I mean, I'm going all for it, man. And so with that regard, I'm not limiting myself necessarily by points. I am thinking I'm going to have two display boards, one that is like a trench warfare deal, and another that is more of like where they're at in the current setting, post Salvation's Reach and everything, where he's like, because there's a part in the newer books, and again, this isn't a major spoiler or anything, but he addresses the regiment, and he's the new general, essentially, and I want to be able to put that up on the display board. I think, man, I'm so excited to get this underway. It's going to be so much fun.
Hey, heck yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully keep us posted as you move through it. I know this is one of those things. This is the kind of a quiet time where everything is on the table. Get as much as you can painted.
Not right. I got to take advantage of it personally. Yeah.
Now that Katie's been blown up, I feel some kindred spiritness with the Tanith.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking that same thing when you mentioned it. I was like, man, something familiar about that.
Maniacs. I'll do mine. We should get together and do some Charlton Heston. Blow it up. You.
Well, gentlemen, that's been a good talk. I hope to see y'all next week.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
Take care. See you again, Paul.
Baby in the corner.